Here we go. Yeah, okay, welcome everybody. So this is the 3rd of February, 2013, and we are learning together, as we do every Sunday at this time. And we have with us today, we have Kurt Bonk. He's going to, we're in the EVO sessions that are going on right now. I'm teaching a course on multiple literacies. And I've got a very noisy cat in the background. But anyway, Kurt has just done a MOOC himself, and he has many perspectives on, well, he has so many perspectives on anything that's open, having written a book on The World is Open. And so it's always fun to talk to Kurt. So Kurt, I'm going to switch off my mic and hand it over to you. So thanks a lot for joining us on this cold Sunday morning.
You know, Vance, it's great to be here in a Webheads type of event. Always great to rejoin your group. And it's even better to see my friend Mark there from Dubai, soon to be from Tampere, Finland. So this is his last hurrah, maybe. Now, I've always thought to myself, how in the world could I top Robin Good, that puts a helmet cam and drives through Rome, Italy? Well, you know, I could top him today. I could just go outside with no jacket on in the freezing cold and take you through the snow. So let me start this talk off by running outside around the block. And we'll see if I can do this here successfully. So I spoke on MOOCs here, what was it, 3 times in the UK. And I had quite a blast doing that. Once in Birmingham at Ashton University, once at, where was it? Oh yeah, Manchester Business School. And the 3rd time I was speaking on MOOCs was in, the UK at the BETT conference in East London. That was the short one. Ooh, I gotta go back. I lost my internet. I think I lost my internet there. Can you still hear me? Not sure. I guess I can't go too far because we have wireless. Okay, well, here's the front of the homestead there, and there's the backyard and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know, that's not as good as Robin Good being able to drive through the streets of Rome and yell and scream at everybody and give his keynote, but hey, that was my one attempt. Let's go out to the backyard here. I should take you down to the creek. I could do that. So here's the back, and there's the hot tub, and there's the woods and the creek, the park now behind us. So now we can get started. Anyhow, a little bit of snow. Here's the dog. Hey, Dylan, talk to them. Say hi. Everyone wants to talk to you, Dylan. Okay, so you're out of breath, too? I haven't gone running in a few weeks. I was sick before going to the UK. And then I had to prep, and then I had to go. So I need to go running this morning somewhere. That was a start. So, okay, now I'll make a big puddle here on the floor and get yelled at for my shoes. Well, that was cool. Anyhow, do people have questions before I get started here on MOOCs? Does anyone have a set of questions for me? My friends in Manchester Business School gave me a whole stack full of questions. They want to know about the pros and cons of MOOCs. They want to know about how to sell the concept of MOOCs to their administrators. They want to know how to teach a MOOC. They want to know about instruction design related to MOOCs. They want to know about the viability of MOOCs, the business plans related to MOOCs. This talk that I might walk through will go through the types of MOOCs, business plans of MOOCs, a bit about how to teach a MOOC, I did it during BETT, and it was quite a fun and engaging talk, but this is a different thing. This is online. I'd like to know more about my own MOOC and other MOOCs like CMOOCs. Okay. Let's see. Behind me here, this is the set of questions, this way, from Manchester Business School, and you can see a little bit in there what trends and draw the line in the sand between MOOCs and paid-for courses and central development teams and quality and disadvantages of something. How to create a super course? Is there a paradigm shift happening? How do you compensate staff for, you know, doing a MOOC? And the back has all sorts of answers. The front has all sorts of answers. And your question is about CMOOCs. And in there, and about my MOOC. Well, a CMOOC is something called, a connectivist MOOC. And my dissertation was on social constructivism and I teach learning theories, but I don't believe in CMOOCs are the only way to go. I mean, if you want to call it a CMOOC, fine, but MOOCs, people just call it a MOOC, massive open online class, and, you know, and that's just what it is. It's a massive class. There's no learning theory wrapped around it that you have to abide by. But if you call it a CMOOC or a Planck, personalized learning environments and network knowledge, then yeah, you have to abide by, I guess, the notion of being more personalized. But I better shut the door right there because I have my laundry going on behind me here. So some people drink the Kool-Aid of connectivist MOOCs. They believe after having taken a MOOC from my friends in Canada that MOOCs have to be connectivistic in nature, and I disagree with that point. I think you can teach a MOOC from a behavioral point of view if you want to. It's still a MOOC. Is it the best MOOC? Nah. It's not better as a behaviorist MOOC or a cognitive MOOC than a connectivist one, but it doesn't mean you can't do one. It doesn't mean it isn't one. Massive open online class means it's a massive open online class. You could teach it like I did with Blackboard, which some people find appalling, or there's a better word for that. There's a lot of people out there that don't like Blackboard because of the lawsuits, and therefore some people try to purposely sabotage my MOOC and say bad things about it wherever they could. We told, you know, after a week they went away, and every time we got in the press, they came back to say awful, kind of, you know, really deleterious comments, shameful things, actually. So, you know, I was disappointed with humankind when I did my MOOC. There are people out there that just, you know, they're sad. And they also are, there are some people out there that had taken a MOOC with folks in Canada and believe that that's the only way to do one. And I love my friends in Canada, but they don't have the prescription on teaching a massive open online class. So, you know, I think they are very knowledgeable. I think they're leaders in the field, and they've done a lot for us. But at the same time, we need to experiment with other types and formats and be more accepting of the human beings out there that are trying to enhance teaching and learning and help people. Sure, you can open another mic if you want, and help people to grow. So our MOOC was done with 3,500 to 4,000 people who are trying to use course sites from Blackboard. We were trying to train them on how to use course sites to teach, a free tool, but we had people coming in who didn't realize the purpose or scope was to help people teach, and is trying to help human beings out there, and all they could say was negative things about the fact that we're using Blackboard. It's, again, a very sad statement on the human on educational process and about human beings in general. People tend to believe that you have to abide by a certain theoretical doctrine in order to be a success in the world. But on the other hand, I'll let you read the testimonials. Once those saboteurs left, let me post a link to some of the testimonials that we had on our and people really had a great time once those initial people had exited. Now, granted, we made a lot of mistakes the first week. We didn't have small groups or teams, but we were willing to make changes. And once we made changes, there were still press reports coming out in the Chronicle of Higher Ed and other places, and these people were coming back to say all these nasty things still. What worked and what didn't work? I think recapping weekly worked. I think sending out a mini book at the end of all the things that we shared back and forth. My 8 TAs helped out, especially a couple of them. I had a couple people that got gift cards from Blackboard, not monetary rewards, but small gift cards to help out. They got a line item on their resume. I think that helped. I think feedback to the people the first week when they post their initial profiles, that worked. Other things that tended to work in there was to divide up by alphabet who's going to give feedback to whom. So some person was in charge of letters A, B, and C, and then D, E, and F. So dividing up who's giving feedback also helps. I think that being flexible in nature and responsive to people's questions as you go works. We also had, so some were credit-seeking students, others were not. Nobody got credit. Everyone got a certificate or a badge, I guess a badge, if they completed the course, and it was self-paced and self-checked. There was no grading by me. It was a professional development MOOC. Think about summer workshops in a school or summer workshops on a university campus. Nobody grades anything. You self-assess what you got out of it, and that's pretty much what we did. So there are 22 types of MOOCs that I've come up with, and a professional development MOOC is one of them. And it's the least grading intensive, but probably the most feedback intensive, because people want you to look under the hood and see what works and what doesn't work. By looking under the hood, I mean looking at people's courses that they designed. So yeah, we had a weekly live session or synchronous session, and for some people it was effective, for others not. Keep in mind that I had people sitting next to me handing me cards of questions that were coming on the screen at the bottom. So while I was answering a question, I'd get a question card in my hands. Attrition is hard to say. 3,500 people came. The normal attrition rate in these things, or completion rate, is about 15%. I'd probably say that we had, in terms of full completion, maybe that percent. In terms of active participants of the 3,500, we probably heard from 1,000 of those people on a fairly consistent basis. On an extreme basis of participating a lot, maybe 100 of those, 150, 200, 250, I don't know. And there are numbers out there that Blackboard collected on who completed the class. I don't have that. And I rarely get that when I go off and do a workshop in the summer in school. So, you know, and by the way, I'm working on a free book on motivation and retention online. And if anyone wants chapters, write me an email. I'm almost done. So I've got 100 activities on how to increase retention. So it is a concern of mine. But at the same time, when I go off and do 100 talks around the world every year, I never get a notion of how many people completed or retained it, so it's not an issue. What's an issue is, do people use the contents? If everyone uses one or two ideas times the 3,500 people that signed up, and they all teach 100 students, the impact is huge. Let me put the interview that the Chronicle of Higher Ed did with me, and I've got it posted in my blog, Traveling Ed Man. So if you want to read a little bit here about how it went, let me just try and pull this up. Unabridged interview, Chronicle of Higher Ed. And then this links to 5 other blog posts I did on my MOOC, which maybe will answer some of your questions. This one, we talk about retention, we talk about pedagogy, we talk about setting it up and expectations. So that might help answer some things in there. Asynchronously, we use Blackboard course sites. Synchronously, we use Illuminate, what we're using here. And most people who initially signed up who had taken other MOOCs felt that course sites and Illuminate were inferior to using social networking tools for a class and using Moodle, a free open source software tool to teach your class. So there's that involved. What else do we have for questions here? Let me see here. Newsletter. We had a weekly kind of summary recap that my TAs put together and Blackboard sent out to people. Again, keep in mind, our MOOC was created to help Blackboard's free people using the free tool learn how to teach. And so they had sent out a newsletter to 27,000 people around the world to get them to sign up. And so those 27,000 people all got the newsletter from Blackboard saying we're going to do this. It was originally going to be 3 webinars, and it got expanded and called a MOOC. It may be, you know, whether it was 5 webinars or a MOOC, I mean, it was a workshop on how to teach online. So, you know, it wasn't really meant for credit. I mean, there could be credit. I teach a class right now where there's 3 credits on something like that. But no credits. It was not offered through Indiana, although we used our studios and my dean came down. ATAs and TAs are teaching assistants, people helping me teach. I had 8 of them. They all signed up. Most were doctoral students wanting something on their CV or resume. Some were good, some were not. 2 were incredibly helpful, or 1 in particular who got hired by Blackboard for all their help. These are good questions. So anyhow, when I do it again, I've turned Blackboard down. So they want me to do 3 more, and I turned Indiana University down. But the reasons were not because of the saboteurs. The reason I turned them down were other reasons. Financial reasons from Blackboard. I mean, they want me to teach 3 classes, and the amount that they were offering me to do so, I'll just be frank and honest, it wasn't worth my time. And then, you know, why would I, you know, sacrifice all that time? So, for them to get their reputation enhanced. So, you know, I like Blackboard people. And I didn't do it for IU because IU is using Course Builder from Google, and apparently you have to be a computer programmer to use it. Someone on our campus named Katie Borner is using it this semester in information science, and is, I heard, going crazy using Course Builder from Google. It's not the best tool in the world to use. You have to, again, the support, the dollars IU put behind this was massive, and she only had 18 people sign up for this thing. So that's what I've heard. So I think I made the right decisions in saying no. Would I do another one? Yeah. I'd love to do one, you know, at the right place, right time, with my friend Ray Shorter at Springfield, who's done one. I wouldn't mind having a weekly panel where I bring in people like Van Stevens and Mark Kircher and others in on a weekly panel and just have a chat every week as a MOOC. Not where I'm presenting something, or alternate it. 1 week I present, 1 week I have a panel. That would be kind of an interesting thing to do. And we have a topical thing. I tried Google Hangouts the last 2 weeks with my class, and the problem with Google Hangouts is it's limited to 9 people free. I guess Google On Air you can have much more. So I'm curious to try Google On Air sometime. Does anyone know about that? Let me see your questions here. I know there's some other questions. Do you think you need like that? It can be done like Google Plus.
Well, I was just wondering, should I say something about it? Because I work with Jeff LeBeau, who's kind of my mentor in these areas, and he's trained people in webcasting. Kind of on a seminar, a webinar. Well, no, sorry. He had a webcast academy where he was training people how to webcast. He got a lot of people doing that, but now it's very simple with Hangout. But that's how you overcome the problem with 10 people is you stream it. You can just embed when YouTube records it. It also has an embed for the stream. So the same embed that gives you the recording gives you the stream as well. So you can have that going, as long as you can have it on a website somewhere and be, you know, have that active from a website, then you can be streaming what you're doing. So you can tell people to come to the stream, to the website that you've set up, and any number of people can come there and hear it. And then, of course, and you can rotate them in and out. You know, you can invite people from the stream. Okay, there's a space free, so you know, just rotate the people through a revolving door. And that seems to work. That's what Jeff is doing.
Yeah, I interviewed Jeff for the World Is Open book, so I know Jeff. Good guy. And now he's got his mind in the right place, trying to help the world out, you know. So I think he shaved his head and went to Thailand for a while and meditated on life, and then came up with the idea of the world, yeah, what
just,
the world
just to add to what Lane said, in that same embed, you can put in a the one that's you can embed a text chat, and so you can have the stream going from your website, and then you can embed a Titan pad, which is what we've been doing lately, and so you've got the text chat and the stream from the YouTube, and then when it's over, you've got the Titan pad text chat archive, and you've also got the recording YouTube at the same site.
I'm looking back at questions that were popped up here. How did you originally teach by webinar? Yeah, they use Blackboard, Elaborate, or Collaborate with course sites, and there was blogging involved, there were wikis, there were resource sharing, and many other things. I had done 27 videos on how to teach online that are 10 minutes long or less. These videos are free to the world. If anyone's interested in them, they just post the, there's a couple of ways to get the videos and access them. I'll post a couple of links here. They're called Video Primers in an online repository of e-teaching and learning. And you can go to my YouTube channel and watch them there. You can go to IU, Instructional Consulting Office, and watch them there. I think I just posted them. There we go. So yeah, there's a couple of links to, and so people watch some of the videos that were up. They could during a couple of the weeks of the MOOC. So these are free things. Now, Chuck Severance, in doing a MOOC at Michigan, had all sorts of slick videos from the 1990s in his MOOC on the history of the Internet. And he had a TV show and such. And so his stuff is pretty you know, high production quality content. Those 27 videos I did were done on a pretty low budget. It was done with course release and one helper that spliced things together. But you know, these were not high-end productions, but we had a Tandberg video and video or picture in picture, high-dev TVs where this was done. So it's not low-budget, low either, but, you know. There are 27 on how to teach an online class, 10 minutes longer or less on planning an online class, how to give feedback, how to handle plagiarism, how to assess, how to do blended learning. There are three on blended. How to create communities, so forth and so on. How to use video. So I did those a couple of years ago. So the shelf life of those videos is maybe 5 years. So I think UAE was using these for the higher colleges of technology. And they've been translated to Arabic as well. And so there's an Arabic version of these, as Mark maybe knows, I think. And that Arabic version is at King Khalid University. And there's pretty liberal license on those videos. We took a pretty liberal license and told people we can download them, share them, remix them, sell. You can even sell them if you thank us. So we've got a number of people. Barbara's with us here from Dallas. Hey, Barbara. Claire, Joel, Lane, if I'm saying that right. Maria. Good to have you with us. Michelle, I know. And Peggy.
Could I just ask a question? So Elizabeth Ann speaking. You said that the book that you were talking about was, the aim was how to use Illuminate, which seems a pretty sort of clear-cut aim. I find that often people sort of announce a MOOC without a specific objective. I don't know, what do you think?
Well, ours was not to explain Illuminate. We were using Illuminate. It was not a MOOC about Illuminate at all. It was we used Illuminate to do the synchronous session. So let me back up. Our MOOC was on instructional ideas and technology tools for online success. That was the title of the course. Instructional ideas and technology tools for online success. So I went through critical thinking activities, creative thinking activities, teamwork, motivation, as far as instructional and pedagogical ideas. The other half was on some of the technologies that were emerging to offer online classes. So it was where pedagogy, teaching meets technology, where nature meets nurture. So that's, our MOOC was basically about how to teach online in a nutshell, or how to teach with technology in a nutshell. So we were trying to help the 30,000 people who are using Blackboard course sites in Africa, in Australia, in wherever in Europe, who are using the system, and give them some skills to use the free tool. See, Blackboard has a bad reputation because of all the lawsuits. And when Blackboard bought Angel, they bought a tool called Angel, which was built here in Indiana. Angel. And the people from Angel, they were from Indiana, a lot of them, and they knew of me, and so they asked me if I could help. They were trying to change Blackboard's reputation. As part of changing their reputation, they wanted to offer a free MOOC to use their free courseware. So I think that's a great idea, but we didn't teach it from a connectivist point of view. You know, I mean, I teach learning theories, and I understand connectivism to some degree. But I'm not wedded to it. So I was just trying to help people learn. You know, Michelle, you were in my MOOC, right? Or not? Michelle.
Oh, I guess.
Other questions for me? Did I get to some of those earlier questions?
I think book kind of turns learning on its head. And so I'm really interested in the ideas that you bring into a MOOC, or why you would. You could say it's a multiplier of education that could be done. Kind of, factory learning sort of education. XMOOCs have been accused of being not too interesting learning programs to help people learn massively. But I'm sure, I don't know if I caught some of your videos, I might have got in on your MOOC a little bit. I remember those crazy videos, like the one that's on the screen right now with you. I think, was that done at your MOOC? The one in the middle? Yeah, okay, so I remember those. So I came into a couple of sessions. They were really interesting. There were lots of ideas, just one after another. And so, of course, it's not, and there's you there personally. And, what are some of the ideas, the learning series that underpin how you transfer what you do into a MOOC environment?
I'm gonna answer the earlier question you had, Vance, and your question you started asking was why do a MOOC? Then I'll get to the learning theory. There are 10 reasons I came up with Manchester Business School on why to do a MOOC. One is public relations, PR. A lot of places do it just for that. Second is experimentation with a course or idea that you want to add to your program. You just experimenting with technology or new audiences. Third is access and servicing the world. Trying to donate time and money and talent to the world. Fourth is, related to that, in addition to access and service, is just goodwill. Fifth is feedback. You want feedback on your course components. You want feedback on your ideas. You want to give feedback to others. Sixth is to let people dip their toes in the water and test the water for a program, which is something new this week called MOOC. If you haven't seen it, 2 degrees from academic partners. This is a new trend here, MOOC 2 degrees, where they give away a course, and then from that course, academic partners or partnerships, I forget what it is, out of Dallas, Peggy may know. MOOC 2 degrees is a Jeb Bush thing, and Governor Hunt of North Carolina. You can go to the video where you take one course free, and then you enroll in the whole package, and you pay for everything else. So dipping your toes in. Seventh reason is to utilize expertise of your program and department. You might have someone who's an expert at graphene, which is what Manchester Business School has some expertise. I think it was Manchester Business School. It may have been at Ashton University in Coventry, but up in Birmingham. But one of those places has a $1.2 billion grant right now to develop graphene, according to today's Bloomington Herald Times. So that's the seventh reason, is utilize expertise. The eighth reason is to partner with others and expand what it is you can do by combining expertise across campuses. Ninth reason is to service your alums, to get alumni in your business school or medical school education or wherever, to some updated skills. The tenth reason is to push yourself to think in different ways for different audiences. So those are 10 whys. In terms of pros of MOOCs, exposure, you get known, your program gets known, your university gets known. Number two is to trial something. In terms of pros, you're being more creative. You're trying something out in a different venue with a different delivery system. And anytime you try a new delivery system, you're forced to stretch your brain and become more creative. The third is to break out of the norm. So if you're always doing things the way you were doing it in the past, a MOOC forces you to try something and gets you out of being stale. Fourth, you can make new friends. I have friends from Italy and South Africa and Australia that I didn't have before. Do you mean you have degrees in MOOCs? No, there's actually this thing called MOOC. It's a program, MOOC to degree. It's just a MOOC to degree. It's just a name for a program. It's not a program on MOOCs. It's one MOOC course on anything. It could be it's a new marketing concept. Yeah. So it could be a master's in marketing, and this first course is free. MOOC to degrees lets you have the intro marketing course free, or it could be a course in occupational therapy, and that first course is free, and everything else costs money. So it's not a degree program in MOOCs. It's called MOOC to degree, meaning you take a MOOC and you move towards a degree in English or in Spanish or whatever the alternative is. So you make new friends and you have more eyeballs looking at contents. The cons of MOOCs are that it takes a lot of time, it's a lot of stress, you can get negative feedback, so you need thick skin. People can try and critique you. There's other cons. So that's some of the things I talked to Manchester Business School people on Wednesday about when I was there. Or no, I take that back, Tuesday when I was there. They had other questions about quality. They had questions about compensation. They had questions about research and other things. We have a hand held up.
It's me again, so, Elizabeth. I didn't want to interrupt. But, I mean, you said again that there is the problem of the criticism from others. And I think that's one of the bases of working online and getting teachers online, is that you're opening the doors of the classroom, that they're no longer in the security of their closed environment. And I think that's the really difficult bit, is to come out and be effectively susceptible to that sort of criticism.
Sure. You know, I don't mind criticism in week one if you can address it and then you move on. But when people keep coming back with the same points because they have a philosophical point of view of how something should be run and you're not running it the way they want it to be run, hence they come back over and over again. We were just trying to help people learn how to teach online. We weren't trying to promote a particular theoretical point of view. And there's people out there and who drink the Kool-Aid of MOOCs that feel as though MOOC has to be taught from a certain theoretical point of view. And that wasn't the purpose
of us. No, that's not what I mean. What I meant was that it seems to me that the problem with getting teachers online is that they are putting themselves out up front, and that is the difficulty for many teachers who are used to teaching behind closed doors. To have the world come in, I think, is the main problem for getting people there.
But you know, at the same time, I had friends that I made from all over, and I enjoyed them. So you have both happening. You have these, you know, great. I'm bemoaning the negative only because you know we had it. I mean, what we had there for in ours was a few people that probably wouldn't show up in most MOOCs. I mean, I don't know, for whatever reason they came to ours, and I don't think they would be there and be as disruptive. And maybe Mark was there. He maybe didn't even feel it. But Vance, going to your other question about the theory behind. You think your question is about the theory behind our MOOC or design, the design behind it? I look at it as creating a learning environment. So we had resources up that people could explore. We had discussions in forums. We had wikis. We had that they could add resources to. And they had blogs for reflection and a weekly synchronous session. So we were creating a learning environment, you know, and people could pick and choose what they want. And I was their concierge. And they could come to me for advices. So, you know, I look at it as a very pragmatic sense of, you know, let's help people find stuff. You know, I teach learning theories. I was trained in cognitive psychology and constructivism. And I still believe that it doesn't matter, the theory behind it. It doesn't matter. What's important is, are you helping someone?
And another question that's always fun to ask you, Kurt, is what do you know, how is MOOCs being part of it or not part of it, what's happening in education? I mean, is MOOCs really, I mean, MOOCs has obviously got a lot of people's attention, but, you know, do you really think that that's the way forward, or are there other developments we should be looking at?
Yeah, if people had asked a question that hasn't been answered, I only have about the chat window from the last 3 minutes is available for me, so you have to retype your questions. I apologize for that. Vance, could you repeat your question? I'm sorry, it went straight through my ear and out the other one.
Well, Kurt, you're so well positioned, you know, with all the books you've written and the, I mean, you just Facebook, yeah, you're doing it there. We can see you. But you just Facebooked, for example, about an article that was actually written a couple of years ago on Wikipedians. No, sorry, the Wikibookians. And I just happened to read it. Well, I didn't read it, but I had it played to me on my way to work this morning. Very interesting stuff. I mean, you're into so many interesting things. I just wonder if are we all being hopelessly distracted here by MOOCs, or are there other directions we should be moving, other things we should be paying attention to, you know, that what directions? You're working on a couple of book projects. Maybe you can preview what you're working on, because it seems to be a good indication of the way forward.
So I guess what you're asking me is, are MOOCs the only news in town? And, you know, I guess right now it is. This is an area that every place I go in Australia 2-3 months ago, you know, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide in the UK, and here in the US, really wherever I talk to. My friends in Korea are interested in MOOCs. My friends in China are interested in MOOCs. This is front and center news at every step along the way. So definitely, MOOCs are one thing. Digital books remain in the news at most places, I guess, today. The possibility of using mobile devices for e-learning with bendable text has reemerged as an interest area for people. A question that keeps coming up over and over is quality. But the person who wrote Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance went crazy trying to define quality. So, you know, I answered it. I can't answer it here. I've got answers about quality. Quality, copyright, plagiarism, and assessment are the four questions we got asked in the 1990s about online learning, and in 2003 about blended learning, and now in 2013 about MOOCs. The same questions. I got answers for each one of them. Pretty much the same ones I had in 1995 for the first fully online classes. I mean, I guess I'm kind of tired of just repeating myself. So, you know, to be honest, you know, we gotta. So what am I currently doing is a book about motivation and retention online using a model I call the Tech Variety Model. And the Tech Variety Model stands for 10 motivational principles: tone, encouragement, curiosity, variety, autonomy, relevance, interactivity, engagement, tension, and yielding products. 10 principles of motivation times 10 activities. Well, that's a good point. Extreme learning is really pushing the edges and trying to document how people learn in unusual ways with technology, because what's unusual today is going to be the norm tomorrow. So we're trying to, what we're doing with the Extreme Learning Project and what I'm doing in my sabbatical starting in May is to collect stories of life change through technology as inspirational stories to take people away from the focus on test scores. Yes, we get enamored with how well we do on a particular test, and instead look at life change. My life changed with technology, with TV and correspondence courses that I took that got me into graduate school. I was an accountant, bored, and so taking correspondence got me into educational psychology. So I want to document thousands of other case stories of life change. That's instead of just looking at test scores and retention rates and quality and copyright and plagiarism and assessment, which are all well-intended and meaningful areas and important areas, I think more important over the top of all that crap is a focus on life change. How do people get new interests, careers, hobbies, perspectives? How do they take perspectives of other people? How can we get people in Iraq and Iran and U.S. and North Korea and other places to understand cultures of the world? You know, to me, that's much more important through technology than a difference of 80 of one percentage point on a standardized test score that people, you know, jump up and down about. You know, that's. I know you drink to anything, Mark. So, Lane says, last year I collaborated with a professor at another university, and we gave each other students access to each other's closed courses. You know, I did a course, as Vance mentioned, the wiki book thing, with students in Beijing Normal, students in Taiwan, students in Malaysia, students in parts of the U.S. collaborating to do a book together, cross-cultural book projects. What other questions? I was just responding to a point by Clara on the relationship between platform and educational approach. You know, that's a good point. I guess that's what people were saying, that we're, you know, saying that your delivery mechanism, your learning management system sort of determines your approach. I guess the point there is technology does matter. Technology matters. The big T matters as much as P. Technology and pedagogy go hand in hand. They both matter. It's just like your genes. Your genes delimit what's possible at the outer edges, but then the environment creates the space for you to work within. And so you have both nature and nurture. And the same is true in online environments. We have technology that sets the parameters of what's possible, and then you have pedagogies that pushes the edges. You know, and we are limited by platforms. So there are limitations to Blackboard. There are people critiquing our MOOC because of using Blackboard. We're right. They are right that there are limitations to these delivery mechanisms, but once we admit to that rightness, then the next step is to fully utilize the system as best you can and do the best you can for the people around the world that have access to only that system. Instead of just saying it's a crappy thing and therefore you can't learn anything, you have to maximize the learning from the systems that you have available to you. You know, instead of having debate wars, I think in my World is Open book, the last chapter, I said we have to stop these debates. You know, I mean, they serve us no good, to be honest. You know, these theoretical debates, we've had them for decades. I've seen them in the 80s, I saw them in the 70s, saw them in the 90s, saw them in the 2000s. You know, we'll have them again. But let's help people learn. That's what the debate should be about. How do we help people take perspectives, social cognition, perspective taking? How do we change people's lives? Again, more lives maybe can be changed from one system than another system. I understand that, but let's just start changing lives first. Moodle fans using that as an excuse for not doing stuff on Blackboard. Probably. You know, I don't know. I'm all for free stuff. I know, you know, we know the guy who developed Moodle. Good friend. I think Moodle's a great idea. Sakai here at Indiana is another one. We're gonna give up on Sakai soon. Let's focus on the positives. Right, exactly. That's kind of what I'm saying. Maria, thank you from Argentina. My son was in Argentina a year and a half ago working with Paul Kim from Stanford. Maybe I should go through some of the 80s some slides here because Paul Kim's in there. She can see what Paul did in Argentina or Arlington, Texas or Abu Dhabi. We have all the A people with us here. Abu Dhabi, Arlington, Argentina. If you're not from an A place, you're not allowed in today. I don't know. Oh, we got New Orc. We got New Orc. Is that like orcs from Lord of the Rings? We have New Orcs. Aussies in Dubai.
Peggy is trying to ask a question. She doesn't know how to click on the mic. So I've got the second mic now. I'm going to release it. When I do, that your microphone should be where you can click on it. And if you have a mic, then you can ask your question.
Hello. Hi. Can you guys hear me? Oh, great. Okay.
Yes.
Hi. I'm an education professor at UT Arlington. We do some partnerships with academic partnerships. So I'm really interested in this. I teach large online classes, anywhere graduate classes, anywhere from 100 to I've had up to 400 students. So I feel like they're MOOC-like, if that's a word or if that's appropriate. And I've just started doing webinars. I've learned a lot about.
I'm going to refill my tea while
you're
chatting.
I've learned a lot about webinars by participating in yours. I'm trying to learn as I go, but the students have really taken to the webinar aspect of these very large online classes, and I'm wondering how I can maximize their use because I feel like I'm improvising and learning as I go. They're exciting, but I don't know if I'm doing them correctly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. There's a woman who's got a couple books about synchronous. She has a company called InSync, InSync. InSync. How do you spell sync? Well, however you spell sync, I can't spell right now. And I'm blanking on her name. Maybe Vance knows her name or can look her up here. She's out of Washington, D.C. area, I believe. And she has a lot of advice about how to teach a synchronous session. She started offering these advices in like 1998 or 99, so she's done this forever. Her name's on the tip of my tongue right now. So you were in my MOOC, Peggy?
Well, Peggy, you have to reactivate the mic.
People still hear me?
Hello. Are you guys there? Can you hear me? Okay.
Yep.
This format's new to me. I use Blackboard Collaborate.
Were you in my MOOC?
Yes, yes, I believe so. A couple months ago, or maybe more. Yeah.
Back in May. Did you try and sabotage my MOOC?
No, I loved it. Told everyone about it on Facebook.
So, you know, I was bemoaning the negatives, but it wasn't as bad.
No, it's all
right?
Good. I just feel like all of this is better than nothing. And so my students appreciate the effort. So I think, I appreciate the effort. And so thanks. That's all.
Yeah, you know, so you want some advice about the synchronous session. I did a talk in Manchester this week and in Birmingham, UK, with 20 some teaching advices. This set of slides has maybe 10 advices in it. But in terms of pedagogy, one thing is you want to personalize things and use people's names where you can. You want to definitely plan out ahead for the synchronous session and arrive early in case the internet's not working in the room. And test the microphones out and test the cameras out. And, you know, we had a problem in our studio of it being remodeled while I was doing my sessions, during the week. And then I'd show up in the room an hour early and all the cords would be moved and everything, and it took a while to set up. And if you have props like I do, and I had singing and I had a guitar playing in the last session, you have to script things a bit, not fully, but script it a little bit. You also have to make sure that people don't interrupt you and have the rooms double booked. There's, it may look simple, but there's all sorts of things. And when I did the 27 videos on how to teach online, the room next door was being remodeled, and there were jackhammers going and loud, hammering. So I would tape my sessions at 2 in the morning or 1 in the morning to avoid all the construction that was going on. You don't see that in there. Also, we had brownouts going on. We had in the room I was in, it was probably 105 degrees, 110 degrees, which is nothing to Vance there in Abu Dhabi, but it's pretty significant in Indiana. So there are things you don't notice. I also had a cold when doing those 27 videos and sinus issues in a hot room, 105 degree temperatures, and at 2 in the morning, you look at it and you don't get any sense of that. So there are so many things that can go wrong. Your mic can drop. Like I just dropped my mic as I was running down the street at the beginning of this session. I didn't think about the internet. So you just got to get there early. You got to personalize and use their names. You have to have teaching assistants sitting next to you looking at the moderator window to see for questions, like Vance is doing here, popping questions at me because I can't pay attention to all the questions at one time. You have to have polling questions, maybe have breaks. You should try and look directly at the camera when you can and personalize and throw something, at people just to keep them engaged, for whatever you're doing. So, things that are a little adding variety to the session and personalization and eye contact and all those things. There's just like teaching a regular class. Recapping what happened, the resources that were shared. So, I haven't told you anything you don't know about previously, but what do we ever get her name in the woman who's from InSync training? I guess I can look that up as I chat away here. InSync, InSync. Let's see who comes up here at InSync. InSync, www.insync.com. There we go. It's not giving us the InSync website. Maybe they've moved. InSync, I maybe type training. And I should remember her name. Here we go. InSync training. Let's see what happens there. Contact us. I'll maybe have to think of it later and send it to Vance. Jennifer Hoffman is her name. Jennifer Hoffman. Let me try that. I just popped into my head here. And so there are other people from Learning Times that also offer training. Jennifer Hoffman, InSync. Let's see what comes up here. I can't spell here, so bear with me. I never could. So I can't even spell my mom's name. So just, She is not too happy with me, but okay. It comes up to the same website. It lists InSync training, so I do have it here. But she has a few books. I think this is the website. Try that. See if that works. Jennifer has a few books related to training and synchronous training that you might want to get with Josie Bass or John Wiley or Pfeiffer Publishing, all owned by the same place. That may be them. Her picture used to be up there. That's not, I don't see her picture now. Yeah. There, I think, what's his name, Vance Jonathan something or other, who has a book on synchronous training as well,
Jonathan
from Learning
Finkelstein.
Times. That's it. So Jonathan Finkelstein has a book on synchronous training or webinars, and Jennifer Hoffman has a couple of them. She gave a webinar yesterday. There you go. Wow. So that will provide some expertise. Jennifer's got some nice subtle little tips about, having police tape. I have this yellow police tape outside my door. Do not disturb. Learning's in progress. I could run downstairs and show that to you. I mean, that would be helpful. We're at 10 o'clock. We're an hour in. We've had questions for about an hour. I've got these. Let me skim over a few things maybe from my talk on Thursday and at BET, the British Ed Tech Conference. Now, BET is in East London now, near the Olympic Stadiums at Excel. And it had 40,000 people this year, I believe, something like that. Some amazing number of people going through BETT. Give you the website. I gave a talk in an arena that holds 1,000 on extreme learning, that talk was, and I also gave a talk in a live learn session, like a sideshow booth area. This is a massive place. I mean, the exhibit hall is like the Florida Ed Tech Conference, which is also massive down there in Orlando. So they have a learning technologies conference for corporates on the west side of London the same week, which I originally was invited to. And then they uninvited me, and a week later I was invited to BETT. So is everyone with us here? You still can hear me? I've got a computer saying, say a command.
No, you're fine. We can hear you. Just fine. We can see you. Everything's cool.
I'm fine. Okay. My phone's going off or something. Okay. So BETT had not even put it in the program. At least I didn't see it. My session, I was worried we're going to have two people. It was in the online, but it wasn't in the physical one that I saw. And we ended up with not only two people, we had a full, it was stacked, and people were on the outside trying to find their way into, it's like a circus tent. I guess best captured as a circus tent of some kind. It was more than a circus tent, but it was a little bit of barriers with open air walls and stuff, and the exhibit halls wrapped around us on each side. And we maybe had 120 to 150 people there, close to 150, I'd say, and I expected 2 or 3 or 10 maybe. So it was quite mass. I mean, it was quite fun. It was really fun. Let me so what's happened and how do we define MOOCs? My friends in Canada, there, if you look at the slides, we'll go through some of the slides. They've got a video on MOOCs, and they define things from a connectivist point of view. I've clicked the next slide. I'm not sure how long it will take to go to the next slide, but I might have to have Vance do that. I'm not sure, because it's not going to the next slide here, but maybe I have to try. So there it goes. So taking forever. Bill Gates is putting money behind MOOCs. He put $10 million behind Salman Khan. That's June 25th, 2012, in terms of news. When Bill Gates is interested in MOOCs, when we've got we got Newt Gingrich offering a MOOC. We've got presidents doing presidential contenders anyhow, putting up a MOOC, and we've got the world's richest individual getting interested in MOOCs. Well, you've got the Dalai Lama with a Twitter feed and a podcast show, and you've got the Queen of England uploading videos to YouTube, and Barack Obama having his BlackBerry and so forth. Times are interesting anyhow. Again, I've clicked the next slide, and it's taking zillions of years to get there. So why don't I just say, Vance, how about I'll just say next slide and you do it. So we got pre-suffering MOOCs. Next slide. So
next
we've
one?
Got...
Next
you know,
slide after this one?
Yeah, sure. Just keep going. I'll just say next slide. When you got Catholic priests doing MOOCs, it's just a thing. When I was in Catholic school, we had no technology at all. By the way, and so here's the conversation in Australia. People in Canada have something new called the evolution. The evolution with three L's. The evolution that has lots of articles on MOOCs. It's a new online news. And in Australia, they have the conversation. Of course, in the UK, they have the Guardian, and here we have the Chronicle of Higher Ed. The Chronicle of Higher Ed in the US has a timeline tool that that summarizes all the articles they've written on MOOCs. So if you type in Chronicle of Higher Education and MOOC timeline, you could read all the stuff they've done. The conversation in Australia was something that people wanted me to read before I went to Australia 3 months ago. I thought I was prepared for my talks. I was ready to get to the airport, and all of a sudden they sent me 40 articles to read on MOOCs. Australians see the U.S. ahead in science and technology, so they want to take the lead in humanities. They compare MOOCs to exercise bikes in that only 20% of people who buy an exercise bike actually use it, the same with the people who sign up for a MOOC. Is that a bad thing or a good thing? That's just their metaphor. That's October 9th, 2012. They had a whole series of articles in October, in November. Next slide. We've got on November 2nd, the New York Times putting up MOOCs online. And writing an article about MOOCs. They interviewed me for this piece, and the editor cut my part at the last second, right before going, after waiting 3 months. But it's a good article. You should read it. It summarizes what happened in 2012 at Stanford and at MIT and other places with electronics courses and AI courses and other things. That was November 2nd. Next slide. And, you know, there's other places you can go. The New York, Time magazine folks had a whole special issue in October about changes in higher ed and the dropout rates and the costs, this triple convergence of increased costs, increased open educational resources, and more MOOCs being offered online for people to take courses, so and lower budgets, of course. January 8th, the Sloan Foundation had a new report showing not most people aren't even there yet, aren't even thinking about MOOCs or you know, have not decided about MOOCs. Only about 15% have even decided or offered a MOOC. So while this is in the news every day, the vast majority of people are still at the beginning stages, haven't really done a whole lot, you know. Really, we hear a lot of people have taken a MOOC, but really in terms of universities, schools, governments, military settings, most people haven't done much. Next slide. So that's a couple weeks ago from Babson and Sloan. Last week, MOOC to Degrees was announced by Jeb Bush. When he's not fixing elections for his brother, he is interested in education and MOOCs and other things, apparently. He actually has a lot of interesting educational ideas that relate to the use of technologies. And he's banded together with somebody from Dallas who's got the MOOC to Degree program started. There's a new video showing what Arizona State and Cleveland State and others are doing. Peggy says AP has boosted your enrollments. Okay. So you've got there in Arlington, you've got the David Perry as well there, right, doing the Twitter stuff. So, yeah, there's the article where we were interviewed by the Chronicle. There's a whole, you should try and find the timeline from the Chronicle, Vance, and post the timeline up there if you can find it. So MOOC to Degrees is this new thing where you have a loss leader, an initial class, and once you take that initial loss leader class, you can take everything that they make available. So, what was I going to say? There's also a company out there I've been hearing a lot from, and maybe they're from Argentina or Brazil, called Allison, that's offering MOOCs and open classes for blue-collar workers, and it's paid for by advertisement at the bottom. That's their business model. I'm going to go through business models in a little bit here. Next slide. So how many of you have participated in the MOOC before? Just type in the chat window, yes or no. Have you participated? So Mark got an A from me. Okay, so a lot of you have. How many of you have taught a MOOC? Anyone taught a MOOC? I think Peggy said she did or is doing one. If you've taught a MOOC, type in how many students you had in your MOOC. Maybe what it was about. Oh, they're not free. Okay. All right. Next slide. Again, I apologize these slides taking so long. So let's look at 15 quick leadership principles. Next slide. Leadership principle number one includes being first. So my friends at University of Illinois at Springfield offered a professional development MOOC a year and a half ago. Ray Schroeder there on the left, I helped him out. He had 2,700 people. He's now doing a MOOC for Blackboard. Ray is the one that you should all be reading about, not my stuff. Ray's God. Ray knows everything. At Springfield, it was the first place that wanted every single class fully online and every single class face-to-face to offer students a choice. On the right-hand side, you got people at Stanford offering a course to over 160,000 people, 23,000 completed, 238 perfect scores. The guy teaching it, Sebastian Thrun, was so enthralled by doing it, he quit his tenured job at Stanford and started Udacity, or the Udacity of Hope. Next slide. That was back a year and a half ago, June and August 2011. September 2011, I'm basically walking you through the news here from the standpoint of leadership principles. The second leadership principle is try something new or unique. Stanford offers something new and unique by grading your papers, having the computer grade your engineering content for you for free. That would be unique. However, you don't get a certificate from Stanford. You don't get a credential necessarily. Next slide. That's in the Stanford Engineering Everywhere. Principle number three from January 23rd of last year, 2012, take risks. Sebastian Thrun took a risk by quitting his job. And that's a big risk in starting Udacity. Now, he's the guy who did the car that drives itself, right? So. Everyone knew him, and because he was so well known, he can get hundreds of thousands of people to take his classes. You know, now Mark Kircher is pretty well known there, and he could maybe get 100,000 people taking his classes. And you'll notice at the bottom right there that some places like Colorado State Global Campus and Antioch College in LA are now giving credit for MOOCs. That's a big new trend. Next slide. Principle number four. Principle number four involves rethinking our credentialing, rethinking what we're going to give people in terms of assessments. And so MIT said, we've got 2,000 courses on the web, and we'll get all Mark's zero friends taking the classes. We've got 2,000 people on the web and 2,000 courses, and so why don't we create MITx? If people take four engineering courses and can pass the computer tests, we'll give them a certificate. And so Elliot's joined us. Hey, Elliot, are you going to come over for the Super Bowl today? Hey, man. All right, we'll see. so we should have a party here, get Miguel, and we'll have to play shoot some pool. Good to have you here, Elliot. Elliot's a former Broadway play actor and soap opera actor, who is in our instructional technology program, and he can give the rest of this talk. So, you know, we got kids in Pakistan and Bangladeshi taking four classes from MIT and getting a certificate from MITx. Times have changed. You know, this is a significant trend. Principle number five, next slide, Vance. So EDX is the linking together or the partnership between MIT and Harvard. Principle number five, form symbiotic relationships. Coursera, and I met Daphne Kohler at BETT. Daphne founded Coursera with Andrew Ng. She's signing new institutions in the UK. They're only going to have a few in the UK. Most are going to be in the US, apparently. You got some universities like Virginia and Duke and Rice, but you got the University of Melbourne, and you've got University of Edinburgh in Scotland and the Hebrew University in Israel. So I guess if they have Hebrew University in Israel as a member of Coursera, they'll have a difficult time getting universities in the Middle East to join that are not from Israel. That's be my guess. I had the same problem when I did my blended handbook. I had a chapter from Israel, and people in Dubai and Abu Dhabi took their chapter away. They said they can't contribute because I had a chapter from Israel in the book. It's really sad, and I apologize to people who might be Arabic here, but it's really sad when cultures dictate whether one can have a chapter in an edited book. It's a really sad statement about life culture. That was 2006, 2005 when the contracts were signed. We had people in Dubai and Abu Dhabi wanting to put chapters in the book. When they found out we had a chapter from Israel, the government wouldn't let them in the UAE. So you know, I guess Coursera is going to run into that issue, I guess is my point, or I would assume they're going to run into that issue because they have Hebrew University of Jerusalem in there, you know. So it does, you know, I mean, impact sometimes who I invite to webinars. It's unfortunate, but I know there's going to be tension. So forming symbiotic relationships. And Coursera is one that announced on April 18th their entry into this field of MOOCs. They have the platform that people offer MOOCs within. Next slide. And they hit a million students by August. So they start in April, they hit a million by August. This is unheard of. Okay, Udacity, 203 countries. In less than a year, they're addressing people in 203 countries, 42% from U.S., 7% from India, 5% from Britain, 4% from Germany. This will change. You know, you see Brazil there in Coursera, and I'm sure Argentina there is part of this and so forth. This will change. And next slide. In April, I offered my MOOC on Instructional Ideas and Technology Tools for Online Success. We did an intro video to get people into the course. They did press releases out of Blackboard. I mean, Blackboard did a really excellent job of getting the word out. And, it was a nice partnership between Indiana and Blackboard, even though Indiana will probably never subscribe to Blackboard. I say never, but it could happen. So it was interesting that we formed a partnership, even though we have something like Moodle here. We have Sakai. We built something that's competitor to Blackboard, yet we could still partner on a MOOC. I thought that was pretty fascinating, you know. Next slide. And again, you can take my stuff's still up there. You can all go up online if you go to my homepage and go and click. Now, Mr. Bean, everyone remembers Mr. Bean in the movie. I forget what his screen name is. Mr. Bean there on the right-hand side says the UK is not going to let Coursera win out, so we're going to offer MOOCs. And they are. People at the OpenU in the UK are taking a leadership in this, and others are signing up. I think Ashton University has signed up to be a partner in this, where I was, and many other universities within the UK have also, taken an initiative there. That's December 13th, 2012. Next slide. And principle number six: offer incentives. Udemy. If you haven't seen Udemy. It's called the Revenge of the Underpaid Professors. And Udemy, you can offer a class for free online or for $35 or $50 or $100, however you want to cost it out. And you get a percent of the revenues. I don't know, it's 55%, 45% split, something like that. Someone can look that up. But I think you keep 55%, if I'm not mistaken. Some people made over $100,000 a year last year teaching courses for Udemy. You know, so Mark, when you're in Tampere, if you know they end up not firing you within a month because you're not that good, then they oversold yourself. You can always go to Udemy and offer a class and make money that way. Just kidding, Mark. But you know what I mean. There is a backup plan. Now everyone can have a backup plan, right? Instead of saying I rely on Indiana for my paycheck, well, I can have Udemy as my backup plan, right? Or something else. Within a decade, there'll be dozens of these things up there. It won't just be about offering courses online. It might be other kinds of services up there. So incentives. Offer incentives to get, Blackboard didn't give me enough incentives to do any more. You know, it was, I hate to say it, but monetarily, it was a lot of time for the amount of money they wanted, a lot of people. It just wasn't worth it to me. So you need some incentives. Number six, next slide, Vance. And apparently people at in Ashton University were experimenting with Udemy, and they told me that it's not as robust as what they would like. So they're still building out and speccing out Udemy. The other thing I should point out about Udemy and about Coursera and about Udacity is that many of these places are hiring. So Mark, if you lose your job in Tampere, you can apply to work at Udemy, Coursera, Udacity with your MOOC experience. And other things that you know. They might need a person like you who has connections to the Middle East and to Scandinavia and to Britain. You know, those things you could parlay into a position at Udemy or at Coursera or Udacity or some other place. Number seven is collect testimonials. Vance already posted the link to my Coursera, or my Chronicle interview. But the Chronicle interviewed people who came to Coursera headquarters in Stanford campus, and they had a picnic, and people flew in. People go to meet each other. They meet each other, and they have meetups, and they meet in cafes in Barcelona. They meet in cafes in Dubai, and they chat about the MOOC they've taken. They meet in cafe in Buenos Aires or wherever you happen to be around the world. So collect the testimonials. I showed my testimonials. I put the link up to my set of testimonials up there already. You can read these. I'll put them up again. You can see, you just scroll down a little bit, you can see what people have said about our sessions. I got 20 of them. Collect them. If people doubt the benefits of MOOCs, if your administrators say, hey, you know, how do I know this is going to be beneficial? If you've got testimonials, it's a big win-win kind of thing. You know, you feel good, your place feels good, people who you've posted testimony feel good, you've put them up there. next slide. So, number eight, set bold, audacious goals, such as teaching 300,000 students in one class. Sebastian Thrun said, I'm tired of teaching 100 students. I'm tired of teaching 1,000 students. I want to teach 100,000 in one class. He set an audacious goal. He taught a statistics class of 300,000 people, I think it had. Next slide. That's June 18th. That's 6 months ago or 7 months ago, right? June 19th, one day later, where he left at Stanford, said, we can do better. We can do better. We're going to offer a class with 400,000 students in it. And we're going to use Piazza. Piazza is a free tool on the web to offer classes online. Piazza. So, you know, make these courses available for free. And Piazza lets you crowdsource answers. It's office hours on the web. And I used it this past fall. And it works really well. The woman down there on the bottom graduated from Stanford now is like, millions and millions of venture capital dollars to create Piazza and spec it out. And Stanford's using it for all their MOOCs, and other people are as well. So when Peggy asked earlier about what are the tools out there for MOOCs, this is one. Another tool is called Course Networking. It's being built by the people who built Angel originally. Course Networking, or thecn.com, I think you can get there. This is a tool that's like Facebook and Twitter wall pages where you discuss topics and questions all for free, and you get points for contributing and for sharing and for other kinds of things. So there's some built-in motivators. They're still speccing this out. Some of my students are helping. We've just been hired to work on TheCN. The Piazza is another one, like pizza, only, you know, like that, Piazza. That's June 19th. Imagine 400,000 people in a class, you know. Next slide. Principle number 10. I think I have 15 principles. Get media attention, such as a Forbes article says, how would you like a graduate degree for $100? That will get you media attention. Getting on NPR, getting in a TED Talk. The woman down there in the bottom right is Daphne Kohler. I don't have my pointing tool here. I don't think I have a pointing tool, but maybe I do. Let's see if I have a pointing little pointer. Let's see here. Right there, that's Daphne Kohler. She was in the BET conference last week. So I don't know where the unerase one is. I'm sure it's in here. Which one's the eraser tool? Erase. Oh, there we go. Cool. So that's Daphne. Next slide. Build on your strengths. When Google said we're going to do a MOOC online, of course they're going to do a MOOC on search skills, right? So that's what they're going to do, a MOOC on search skills. Okay, remember these old technologies? That's how we searched in the past? Not easy. Not easy. Competing technology has changed a little bit. Yeah, I'm fun with this little thing here. Okay, next slide. Building strength. They're going to have, if they do a MOOC with 100,000 people in Google, imagine all the new users, power users of Google. My friend Chuck Severance at Michigan offered a MOOC. There's Chuck. He's a crazy man. He's the man with the open source tattoo on his shoulder right there. He's got an open source tattoo because he built Sakai, the Iron Chef on television, Chef Sakai. Well, he had gone to the UK and done all these slick videos in the 1990s, interviewing people who were early players in the computer science field, other things. He had 42,000 people take his MOOC. He's going to do another one in May on the history of the Internet and technology and security. Fascinating guy, Chuck. I highly recommend his MOOC. In March, Chuck and I will be in Austin, Texas, doing a cage match, like an ESPN, Pardon the Interruptions. We're going to have a cage match on MOOCs at the South by Southwest EDU conference, where Bill Gates is the keynote. When people ask me what's the latest and greatest conference in the U.S., it's that one. They've gone from 1,000 people 2 years ago to 2,000 last year to 5,000 this coming year. In another decade, they will have 40,000 people at this South by Southwest. It's right before South by Southwest Music Festival and South by Southwest Interactive. We had submitted to South by Southwest Interactive, but you have to be Tim Berners-Lee to be accepted. In fact, Tim Berners-Lee was accepted, and we were not. But ours was rated so high that South by Southwest EDU picked it up. And I was there last year and met Arnie Duncan, the Secretary of Education, at the conference. I would recommend it. He had 42,000 people, and they did peer editing of each other's work in his MOOC. There's a different way to assess work. Next slide. July 23rd. And Chuck took a motorcycle around the U.S. in his car to visit people in Washington, D.C., and New York City, and San Francisco during his MOOC. When it ended, he flew to Barcelona to meet people. He flew to Manila, Philippines, and met people, and to Seoul, Korea. He's a crazy man. I don't know where he got the money from, and I don't think you could get money to do a MOOC, an interactive MOOC, and fly all over the world, but that would be a great gig if you could get it. My friend here, Paul Kim at Stanford, he did a MOOC on designing a new learning environment, and the top 10 or 20 designs, he said, you know, I'll introduce you to venture capital money as an incentive. Students voted. He had 20-some thousand students taking the class. They voted on the best designs at the end. But Stanford has courses in finance and creativity, all in their venture lab. So you might want to take a look at Stanford Venture Lab. Next slide. That was October 15th. Paul's going to do another one of these things in May. Leadership principle number 12, don't make rash decisions. Don't fire your president and then rehire her 2 weeks later. Don't fire her because she's not going to do a MOOC. Don't fire your administrators for not jumping on the MOOC bandwagon just because you think it's the latest and greatest since sliced bread. So that's what they did at Virginia. They fired their president. And then the alumni rebelled. Their students rebelled. The faculty rebelled. And then they hired her back. And now they're doing MOOCs, minimum of 10,000 a class. Anyhow, don't make rash decisions. Don't fire Mark Kircher there in Finland just because he, you know, takes three coffee breaks the first week. You know, he's moved from a very warm climate to a cold climate, and he's going to need those coffee breaks really badly. Anyhow, next slide. Principle number 13, I think, is be proactive. Indiana University has a website where you can train in plagiarism. Train students and faculty about what plagiarism in it is. Don't do like these MOOC people and all of a sudden having an honor code on the web. I will not cheat, just like at Virginia a decade ago where they actually cheated. Don't all of a sudden offer proctored exams from Pearson because, oh, you're going to have to be stuck with Pearson books. Pearson has 200 or 120 testing sites. People doing MOOCs had a plagiarism problem. And Pearson stepped forward. And people who had created honor codes in the past stepped forward and said, you can do honor codes. Well, that's not good enough. You shouldn't be reactive. You should be proactive. Next slide, principle number 14. There are 35 ways to reduce plagiarism. I don't have time in this talk to go through all 35 ways. And there's a new way they're going to detect your typing skills. Not typing skills, but typing behaviors. I think Coursera or Udacity people have designed a new software program that you can detect how people are typing. So I know if Mark's been cheating, if he's got someone else typing in for him, you see. Principle number 14, give something away. Google gave away Course Builder. Indiana gives away Sakai. Moodle people give away Moodle. Piazza people give away Piazza. I gave away $1 million bills. I don't know. What do we give away? I gave away the 27 videos that we did. So give something away. Get people attracted into the course. Now, again, Course Builder is not easy to use. They gave away something that's hard to use. Survey share, that's right, course share, training share. I gave away all that. Library share, university share. I have 8 share sites. Next slide. Number 15, last principle. There's actually 20 in the long version of this talk. Ask questions. Who's the audience? Who benefits? For what purpose? You know, why are you putting these MOOCs up on the web? You know, what are your long-term visions? Where are we going with this? Those are some questions. Let me pause for a second and go to the next slide, Vance, while I'm pausing so I know where we're going next and see if there are any questions. Oh, here's a good polling question. Are MOOCs creating a revolution? Yes or no? What do you think? Yes, no, or maybe. Go ahead and type in. Not sure. Yes, no, or maybe. I don't have a poll coming now. Just type in the chat window. Vancey says yes. Disruption, definitely. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Barbara. Not sure. Might be a maybe. We'll see what else we got here. Let's see what else is coming. Next slide, Vance, by the way. The revolutionary slide in the bottom right wasn't real popular in the UK, by the way. George Washington on, you know, crossing the Delaware wasn't real popular in the UK in his attack on Yorktown and all the stuff I had in there. All right, 15 types of MOOCs. There are actually 22 that I've come up with. Before I get to the 15 types of MOOCs, let me pause for a second and see if there are any questions. I'll field 2 questions and move on, if we have any. So I've got 15 types of MOOCs, and while I wait for a question to be posted, go ahead and post them. Okay. Yeah, or audio question. Thank you.
There's a logistical issue, and that is this room is being used in about 20 minutes, and if we don't clear it in ample time, and that's about 5 minutes from now, we stand a chance of losing your recording because we've got to totally clear the room in order to put the recording on the Illuminate server. So we might want to do a session later on 15
All
types
right.
of MOOCs.
So let's do this.
Or run through it. Take 5 minutes.
No, man. Let me just run through some of these. So go ahead and click. Just click every 3 seconds.
Okay.
Just click on through, and I'll give an overview of some
okay.
of these. So go ahead, and I'll just mention a few of these. So there are different types of MOOCs. A PD MOOC like I did. You might have a MOOC for hiring people. You know, you might have a MOOC for an admission system at a university. You could have people needing skills like marketing skills, management skills. That would be a just-in-time competency. A theory-driven MOOC would be like a connectivist MOOC. A professional development MOOC would be one like I did. We're training teachers how to teach online. These are all types of MOOCs. Loss leader MOOC would be where you offer one class on the web. The next one's going to be a survey we can skip over that and go to the next one. The sixth type of MOOC is a bottleneck MOOC. If you got a difficult course, you might offer it as a MOOC, like a chemistry class, a statistics class, for a calculus class for engineering majors, a cost accounting class for accounting majors. You might have a personality MOOC with famous alums, emeritus professors, famous people in your community offering a MOOC. You might have a name branding MOOC where you have a company behind the MOOC. You might have interdisciplinary MOOC where students or professors might come from different departments and they're working together to put up a MOOC. You might have a MOOC that rotates from one university to the next, from Indiana over to Iowa, over to Minnesota, and back to Wisconsin. You might have a reusable MOOC like my MOOC, where it's always up and people can take it and come back to it. You might have a MOOC that repeats every 6 weeks, or every 4 weeks, or every 8 weeks. You might have an oral history MOOC where people in the general community come and crowdsource content as part of an oral history kind of a MOOC. And there's a new website called History Harvest where people collect information on World War II and so forth and so on. So those are some of the types of MOOCs out there. I've run through some of the MOOCs. Business plans out there include advertisement of MOOC underneath the bottom of a page. So you see some universities out there. Vance, next slide. You might see a business plan out there with advertising paid for at the bottom. Allison has free classes. So American Education University, World Education University has advertisements. Business plan number two, Vance. Next slide. You might have an application fee. Next slide. You might have a assessment fee. So University of the People has an application fee and an assessment fee. You might pay for having your papers graded. That could be the business plan out there. You might pay for a sticker. You know, there's Chuck Severance, the man with the open source tattoo. People might pay for a certificate that they get at the end of an MIT class. They might pay to have a sticker up there. And he met his students in Barcelona, as they said, and he gave away stickers. People came for their stickers. People believe in connectivism, yet they still believe in behaviorism. They want a sticker. They want $1 million. They want a certificate. Don't believe connectivism's the only thing. People want to get stroked. People want to know that they got something from it for their resumes. It's not just about connecting people. There's nothing wrong with connectivism and connectivist Kool-Aid, but you have to drink behavioral Kool-Aid as well. You have to drink cognitive Kool-Aid as well. It's all that. And learning's about all learning theories are relevant and important. I want my sticker. I want my sticker. You might pay, go back a slide, a second, Vance. You might pay at the University of Washington, a web enhanced fee. So they have a base course free. If you want the animations and simulations, it costs a little money. If you want the full-on course, you have to pay a full ride university course. Next slide. So you might pay for 3 credits like anyone else. Next slide. See, next slide. Business plan number 7. So, you know, Antioch University and others now will credential you. Companies might sponsor your MOOC. That's how you might make money. My students are having a conference this month, the end of the month. We got companies sponsoring it, you know. You might have a percent of first year salary. The students that get perfect scores in your MOOC might be guaranteed a job at Google for $150,000 a year, and you get 20% of their first year salary by being the one offering the MOOC. You might lease your courses to further education colleges in the UK or in Australia, or what we call community colleges in the US, because they don't have the manpower or people power to build them. You might share revenues across the developers, users, marketers, and so forth, and sponsors, a sharing model, number 11. You might have the MOOC to degrees, an entryway. You might have a free first course and everything else you pay for. Next slide. Number 12. Oh yeah, eCornell is offering a free MOOC, and Academic Partners is offering a free MOOC, and others are offering a MOOC as number 11. So Cornell offers a MOOC in hospitality management that's free, and you pay for the other ones to get your certificate. Model number 12 is what Facebook tried to do, and that is sell your data. Collect your data and sell it. So now MOOC people are getting a little checkbox and saying, if you agree to take this MOOC, do you agree for us to, you know, sell your personal information? And then the 13th model, which isn't up here, 13th model is a services model where you might sell software, hardware services for MOOC taking. You might offer a class on how to prepare for a MOOC. You might offer a class on how to teach a MOOC. that's a perpetual one out there. That might be a way to make money. And finally, 10 instructor guidelines. We have a few minutes left. I'll go ahead, next slide here. So instructor guidelines include planning, preparing. Next slide, I've already mentioned this. So plan ahead, way ahead. Give feedback in the first week. Give feedback to everyone who posts an introduction. We made a mistake in not giving feedback to everyone in the, you know, so in week one and in the introduction, and get some help, get some TAs to help give feedback. You know, this is all important. Numbers 2 and 3, all about feedback. But you could offer machine feedback, computer feedback, human feedback, volunteer, you know, alums who have finished your program can give feedback. You can also gather geographic data on your people as they come into the synchronous session, Peggy, and I would post little slips of where their people are coming from and talk about where they are around the world. So, you know, Chuck had people in Seoul, Korea, Barcelona, Manila. He went and physically met them and interviewed them. He had office hours in cafes in Seoul, office hours in a hotel in Barcelona, office hours in Manila at Starbucks. Go back a couple slides here. So form social groups. We didn't do that in my MOOC. That was a mistake. We didn't form groups and have social support. Next slide, number 6. Guideline number 6, combining sync and async. Whack people in the side of the head. Bring Chris Dady in your class or John Traxler from Wolverhampton. After talking about their articles asynchronously and bashing them, then bring them in live. People find out that one person's article doesn't represent everything about them. Go back a slide once. At Stanford, they have a cool tool for collaboration on the web. Really cool tool for at the Stanford Venture Lab that I'm jealous of. Paul Kim says, I had 17,000 students. They came from as far away as Zanzibar in Tanzania. You know, it was amazing where they were coming from and forming groups around the world and then voting on best projects. Next slide. And then arrive early for the session. As I mentioned earlier, Peggy, get there early because things can go wrong. Number 8, next slide. And have time for Q&A. Next slide. Share stuff, I already mentioned. Share stuff at the end. Next slide. Collect resources, share resources, give their name as they come and go. Thank you, Barbara. Yes, Roger Van Oka created his own doctoral thesis in the history of ideas, his own major. I use his books too. There's Chuck coming from Barcelona and so forth, chatting with people at a cafe or at a hotel, Catalonia, and so forth and so on. Yeah, Van Oka has a great book, The Kick in the Seat of the Pants, Whack in the Side of the Head, a couple other ones too, Expect the Unexpected. Yeah. So anyhow, so that's some things. I hope you bared with me here. Again, I just got back from a week traveling, and when I got back yesterday morning at almost 2 a.m. and went to bed at 4 a.m. and taught class all day yesterday pretty much and got home and passed out.
Cool. Hey, yeah. I could swear that was really double-strength coffee you were drinking there. Really appreciate this. I've had an experience where we haven't vacated the room early enough, and then people for the next session will come in, and I think I'm getting a little bit nervous about that because they like to come in early to set themselves up, and then once they start coming in, we can't get them out because we get them out, and then they come in while we're trying to put the session down. So I think we're going to have to say good night.
Yeah.
For you, good morning, but for me, it's evening. But we certainly appreciate you.
What time is it there, man?
Till 8. It's not that late, but it's mainly a problem with the next session that's coming in. If we don't, you know, we have to get everybody out of the room and keep them out for a minute or two, you know, before the recording gets made. And if it doesn't get made, then the next session might delete it when they start theirs. So I guess I should say we should drive people away. I'm so sorry about that, but I know if we don't, we might not preserve this great talk that you gave us. But thanks a lot for coming along and giving us 2 talks in one. Beautiful session. Can't wait for the next time.
Sure thing. Sure thing. And I'm always available on email. If you want a copy of these slides to personally download or something like that, I can actually throw in here in the window the link to all 5 talks from last week. These are actually the place to download the original slides if you're interested in that. And if you just want the color PDF of the two slides shows I did at BETT, these are the color PDFs. You can get them. Those are the short talks that I did last week. If you want the longer versions, you can all decide if you want the long version or the short version of each of those talks. Here are the longer PDF, color PDFs. So you've got the short versions, the long versions. You've got the original slides all in this taped recording. So there you go. Wherever you go, there you are.
Okay, thanks, Kurt.
See you, everybody.
I'll put all those links into the archive of this, and I'll spread that around as well. Thanks very much. We really seriously must vacate this room. If we don't do it before the next people come, we will have a big problem. We won't have this recording. So thanks very much. And I have to wait till everybody goes. I have to be the last one out. So I'll be removing people as we're speaking here. But anyway, this will be up at learningtogether.postgres.com, and you can get a recording of the session. And again, super thanks to Kurt. Thanks very much.
Okay, bye-bye, baby. We'll see you all. This will end my transmission today.